Welcome to the Healthcare IT Today interview series. We feel lucky to be able to talk to so many smart, passionate, and knowledgeable people in healthcare. Now, we're taking our favorite interviews and sharing them with you. So sit back, relax, and enjoy perspectives on the world of health IT.
Hey everyone, I'm John Lynn, the founder and chief editor at Healthcare IT Today. We're excited to bring you another in our series of interviews with top leaders in health IT. And today's guest is Jill DeGroff. She's Senior Vice President of Regulatory at Be Well Connected Health. Welcome, Jill.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here today.
Yeah, excited for this discussion. HTI-1 has, hit us, on the holidays. Of course, I think it was in line with ONC's annual meeting, not the holidays, but it came out. So we're going to dive into that today and help people get a better understanding of what's happening in the regulatory space. But before we go there, tell us a little bit about yourself and Be Well Connected Health.
Sure. I joined Be Well almost 4 years ago, and before that, had built a career in private practice as a healthcare privacy lawyer and digital health expert, and really was attracted to join Be Well because of its vision to promote innovation through principles of trust and consumer centeredness, and that's what we do on a unifying platform that brings data, solutions, and services together on one platform.
Awesome. Well, it's interesting because I think since meaningful use, we've all been in the world of health IT, we've had to understand regulation, and it's just become such an important part of what every healthcare organization does. And if I guess even before that, there's a lot of regulation in healthcare. But talk to us about HTI-1. What's your overall reaction to the final rule that was recently released?
I'm actually really quite pleased by it. One of the key principles for Be Well is that we want to enable a connected app-based consumer-centered ecosystem for healthcare, a connected healthcare ecosystem. That is what's going to drive innovation. And that's what's going to sort of break down the silos and the fragmentation that we associate both in the way our legacy infrastructure is set up, but also in the way people experience care and actually deliver care. I mean, we're dealing with the fragility of a health system that is dealing with workforce shortages and administrative burdens, but then also the microaggressions that consumers experience when all they want to do is avoid healthcare. But if they have to enter it, they want it to at least feel like it's a better experience than the last time they checked in, right? And sometimes that desire is disappointed. So when I look at HTI-1, I'm most excited about the fact that ONC listened to us and others in the community in the way they reconciled TEFCA and Firebase API for interoperability, and also addressed some of the long needed improvements in enabling an ecosystem based on Firebase APIs, which I can get into in more detail.
Yeah, definitely. And I think it's interesting what you said about patients, because I think what's fascinating about patients is they think that interoperability is already happening. Like, I think that's their disappointment when they end up showing up to the office and they get a chronic illness. And then they discover, wait, my doctors don't share. It's interesting that perception versus reality, right? That we feel, and hopefully this rule helps us to make that a reality for patients. So I think that's fascinating.
It is fascinating. And if you think about the fact that since the Cures Act, the priority use cases have been around treatment and around patient access. And it's because there is a groundswell of like crowdsourcing demand that only patients can generate. Just for exactly what you say. I help my mom a lot of times going into her doctors. And when I was like, how come you're not connecting to networks? There are all sorts of different things. And I'm like pressing them all the time because it should be more connected. It should be more streamlined. And we know that you can actually create administrative efficiencies. You can reimagine more streamlined clinical workflows that will actually deliver a better experience and healthcare outcomes. But we need to do that on a new chassis. And that chassis is really going to be not dependent, as dependent on legacy infrastructure or your incumbent health IT vendors, but also through an open environment, open standards that promotes innovation so that you can create like an app-based connected health ecosystem. And what that, I like to explain that analogy to how we do work in our own company, you know, where we are connecting with a variety of different workflow productivity apps, and they are connected in the background so that you have a more seamless experience and your information and data is following you within those experiences. That's all we're trying to do through an API ecosystem. And I think that, again, HTI One has done a really nice job of putting Firebase API interoperability at the forefront. A good example of where that is done is in one of the two critical enhancements in the information blocking rule. One is for the TEFCA safe harbor, which I'll get to, but the other is in the all manners exhausted update, which is basically doing a good thing for health systems and others, saying, how far do I need to go to accommodate a request? And the answer is you have to provide at least two manners, but one of them must be through FHIR. So that's good. That's basically saying there's a new level playing field and expectation that everyone who is an information blocking actor has to be able to deliver interoperability through FHIR. And that is also reinforced in the other critical exception, that new TEFCA safe harbor, which is basically saying if it's feasible because a requester and a responder are on TEFCA and the responder is actually capable of access and exchange of information, then that can be a valid manner and you don't have to provide any other manners. But what's good about that rule as well, and it's a critical improvement from the proposal, is that the fee and licensing conditions must still apply. We were actually really concerned and we're glad that HITECH and others expressed concern about the original proposal because it would have invalidated those conditions, which really set, you know, a pro-competitive atmosphere and protect the FHIR API ecosystem. And we didn't want it to be cut off at the knees just because we wanted to, you know, promote TEFCA. We think TEFCA is great, but TEFCA is going to be an iterative process. And so I think that the rule did a nice job of balancing its desire to promote, of ONC's desire to promote TEFCA, but also maintaining Firebase API as an independent obligation.
Yeah, I mean, that was another change that I saw, you know, that you highlighted in your description, which it's if they're capable, right? Like, you know, there's so many in healthcare that don't have a certified EHR, long-term care, post-acute care, et cetera, you know, and so it did allow for other interoperability options, you know, beyond, you know, for those that don't have certified EHRs, which I think is interesting. But it sounds like, you know, you're saying that they reconciled the HTI one final rule with the information blocking as well. Are those the main areas that it further supports these efforts to stop information blocking, or are there some other elements to it as far as pushing that forward? Because I mean, it's clear from Mickey and ONC that they want to stop information blocking. How else did you see this rule kind of reinforce those efforts?
I think that, so information sharing is how they like to talk about it.
Yeah, they do.
We're promoting information sharing. And I think one of the other areas that it's a little bit adjacent from what you know we focus on at BeWell, but it is interesting that they resolved an issue about whether or not the donors that actually subsidize the cost of technology, you know, like certified health IT modules, could somehow find themselves inadvertently an information blocking actor, which is something they really want to avoid. So if you are trying to create an integrated, you know, synthetic integrated care network, right, in order to create risk-based contracts as in a payvider situation. And so you're in a health plan, or you are a health plan, and now you are trying to donate EMR technology, or if you are a large health system and you're trying to make a donation of your EMR to community providers so that you can actually deliver whole person care on an integrated chassis, there was concern about whether or not in either of those circumstances you could have a health plan suddenly becoming an information blocker, which would be like by becoming a deliverer of EMR technology, which carries with it a $1 million civil money penalty risk. So there was a deterrent go there.
Sure. So and you then, shouldn't help.
and then likewise, if you're a health system and you're trying to pull in your community providers and you're suddenly an offerer of certified health IT modules, whether you're suddenly now back into that EMR, you start going into becoming not just a healthcare provider, but again, a healthcare developer or developer of HIT modules, mm-hmm. which in turn puts you back into that $1 million CMP risk profile. So, the lawyers of the world were probably really putting a tamp down on that. And so that's going to be good in terms of being able to open up existing legacy infrastructure in order to support those whole person care, integrated care kind of workflows. So that's, I would say that's another very area.
Interesting.
I was going to say outside of information sharing though, I think the updates on the certification program, especially around where, as there's this sort of standard version advancement process for the types of data that will be exposed and represented at APIs. That's going to expand from V1, which is, 3 or 4 more years old, to V3, which actually has a lot of rich data that's going to support a lot of interesting use cases, I think. An example of that is a EMR is going to have information about a person's health information coverage. Imagine a scenario now where through a US CDI connection and a patient access API, I can learn who not only your clinical data and what your conditions are, but I also know who your health plan is from and what kind of care you get. Like, are you with Medicaid? Are you in an HMO? Are you a Medicare? And if those, and also who is, if it's a Medicare Advantage plan, who is the health plan? That allows me now to turn to the CMS patient access APIs and request data that way. Or when the provider to payer APIs come online, which we expect will be another, maybe it'll ruin the Martin Luther King weekend, but it will, give us a new opportunity to start collecting all that data through. And really the name of the game is to build a comprehensive and timely longitudinal health record. Because once you can put that together around a person, you're starting to break down that fragmentation and allow that information to drive a lot of different use cases that can be valuable to healthcare providers and to the consumer. Again, like if we can actually eliminate the time involved with filling out a medical history on a clipboard, wow, that's a lot of value because that information is there and people don't have to go through that extra attention and effort to remember all that information.
Yeah, I mean, if we can get there, that would be a huge benefit. How do you see patients benefiting from this rule? Will it really give them, access to their health data in a way that they haven't before? Or how do you see patients kind of benefiting from the changes?
Well, I think it's through partnerships with developers, right? Whoever is going to deliver an individual access service to them. And so that's something that, for example, we do with BeWealth. We operate B2B to C. So we are contracting with health plans or healthcare providers, retail pharmacies, and others in order to provision a consumer-facing application that leverages our network of patient access API connections or individual access through networks in order to pull that data through with transparency and control for the end user. And so that is one mechanism. Of course, data can come through for treatment and then be propagated through into a consumer app experience as well, if that is available to a health system and they want to deliver a consumer-facing app. Over time, you know, TEFCA will become more of a multi-purpose tool that will support exchange for more than just treatment, but for all other permitted purposes under HIPAA. But, you know, as we sort of build out those roads and rails, you know, we look for the opportunities to be able to surface that information for consumers, because we also want consumers to participate more meaningfully in their healthcare. Big part of that is give them value on their data. So some of them will want that data in more or less detail. So present it to them in a meaningful way, but then also do things on it that are consistent with consumer expectations, patient expectations, so that you're building trust and that are actually generating value. So if, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility, and it's certainly a capability we support to create automated recommendations and insights, tying back to clinical rules engines that are built on HEDIS and STAR measures and U.S. Preventative Task Force guidelines, all these things that can help surface gaps in care and help close gaps in care. Driving those insights for consumers so they can take action is a nice way of building loyalty, but it can also be a way of creating an administrative efficiency when you tie it back to other kind of integrations. So, you know, an integration of scheduling would be a great way of saying, oh, wow, there's a new care gap. Now, how would you like to close it? And then you connect it to, you know, scheduling care at a place that's convenient for you. That's a nice experience. And that's the direction of what I call the regulatory tailwinds that favor this, you know, innovation that creates this app-based, consumer-centered, connected health ecosystem.
I'm kind of struck by your comment, that's a nice experience, since we can say that so rarely in healthcare.
I mean, I know.
It's a nice experience to engage with the doctor and the nurses. Those are nice experiences, but often it's not, you know, whether it's billing, scheduling, et cetera, it's often not a nice experience.
It's not a nice experience, yeah. But, you know, we think, you know, we talk about open table as the analogy. We want open scheduling, right? Yeah. It should be that simple. And also we have to recognize that care is fragmented, right? People want to choose their doctors. They want to have choice in their doctors. And so when you start, I mean, what we want to see sparked by these regulations is the idea that a collection of healthcare organizations can come together and build their own neighborhood of this connected health ecosystem. And it can be the world they envision that will improve whole person care, drive loyalty, create efficiencies. You know, all the ways in which you can think of driving at value in healthcare, because we need it. We need to drive value. Sure.
Well, it's nice, you know, we talk about the patient. How about the healthcare system, you know, more broadly? Are there parts of the final rule that are going to be more beneficial to healthcare as a whole?
Well, I think certainly, I mean, there are some technical updates in the certification program updates that I think are going to allow for more of these API-based networks to establish. Because right now, you know, we're sort of in the first iteration, and it is it remains a manual process with a lot of interpretation that took the place of prescriptive standards that are being corrected. And I'll give you a good example. Like right now, when we establish connections, the only obligation of a EMR provider is to publish their service-based URLs, the API endpoints. But what they need to include, sort of the metadata around that, is not well-defined. And so it's very spotty. From an experiential perspective, if you're in an application and you're trying to search for a provider, but the information at the endpoint, the metadata around the endpoint is incomplete, it may be harder, in fact, to find the doctor you want to connect your data with. Mm-hmm. So it's an operational challenge. You think about standards in terms of what the technical standards are, the data standards, what data will be supported at an API, but you have to think about the operational standards too. And so I think the example I just gave you, which is basically putting standards around that metadata so that there will be more complete organizational information so that you can drive a better consumer experience is an example of an enhancement that overall is going to support this vision for an app-based ecosystem.
Nice. Is there a part of the final rule that you think is going to maybe be the hardest for provider organizations to implement? Or, you know, it's interesting. I look at HDI1, I'm like, how much do providers care? They think their EHR vendor, their other vendors are going to implement it. But are there some parts that, you know, are going to be hard for provider organizations?
Well, I haven't talked about the algorithmic transparency provisions, which are really, they're really not focused as much on the interoperability piece as they are about what kind of predictive decision support interventions are being used at the point of care in driving treatment decision making. And so that's usually within an EMR or other kind of certified EMR or certified HIT module. I think that may be hard just because there has to be a sort of full audit of how, you know, of the algorithms that are being used today. And we're not operating in a vacuum. ChatGPT is here, and that is innovating very rapidly. And there are strong possibilities that it can produce benefits as well as, you know, concerns with safety. And so I think really navigating those are going to be challenging, and deservedly so. But that's probably a worthwhile effort anyway.
Yeah, absolutely. Interesting. You know, you've mentioned TEFCA a few times, QHINs. What's your reaction to them and kind of the role in interoperability, you know, and certainly as it relates to HDI1, but also just more generally, how are you viewing what's happening with TEFCA and QHINs?
Yeah, well, I think it's not by accident, of course, that the announcement of TEFCA going live occurred 2 days before the annual meeting and a day before the HTI1 dropped. And they really are all fitting together. There are a couple of, we think and we recommend to our clients that they incorporate TEFCA as part of an interoperability strategy, but that interoperability strategy has to be multi-threaded. There are a lot of considerations that really depend on the kind of organization you have, the particular QHIN you are already associated with or choose to participate with as a single on-ramp. And so as an example, if you're a health plan, your benefits of participating today in TEFCA are going to be fairly limited unless you have an authorized treatment purpose for exchange. Also, there are just, existential questions where you don't know what the actual number of participants will be. And the amount of data that will actually come through under TEFCA will be dependent on that data coverage. Mm-hmm. And so there has to be an exchange of value to convince people to participate, because it is in the end a voluntary framework. And I'm actually encouraged, having gone to the annual meeting that Sequoia hosted a month before the TEFCA announcement of going live occurred. It is a robust and open community that's doing purposeful work to try to build out a timeline and priorities and use cases in order to continue to increment value for a wide range of participants. But it is a crawl, walk, run kind of proposition. Mm-hmm. And I would say, like, today, one of the reasons we think a multi-threaded interoperability strategy is necessary is that, again, not only is treatment the only mandatory response today available, but the queries you have to make a repeated query on the same on a patient. There is no push notification when there's new news, right? There is information that comes together as a CCDA document that has to be parsed and deduplicated and standardized before it can ever be moved into a FHIR format, if that is your choice, so that you can make it computable and usable for a lot of different use cases. And that's a heavy lift. And there are burdens and costs associated with that. Um, and And all the while, you've got the Fire API capabilities that eliminate many of those lifts. And I'll just say, candidly, since the HIPAA right of access payment rule essentially makes access through patient access APIs free, there's no good reason not to try to leverage patient access APIs if you're a healthcare organization, because it is the way to get streamed, up-to-date, relevant data more readily in FHIR than any other way. A way of stringing together both methods would be go use a query on document-based exchange to get a broadcast view of all of a person's health records, get a first cut, but then you can also surface who may be the providers that are of most relevance to that person, and then encourage an individual within a consumer experience to go authorize those connections so that you can keep those relevant and up to date and drive value for them seamlessly.
Interesting. I like your crawl, walk, run analogy, because TEFCA really is a toddler that just learned to crawl, right? Like literally just started sending documents. But I think that's the challenge for a healthcare organization right now is, how should they be approaching interoperability? What advice would you give them on how they should approach interoperability, given that many of the standards and kind of the roads that, you know, the rail lines that they need to exchange data on are just being built now, right? Some of them have been longer, but, you know, what would be your advice for a healthcare organization on approaching interoperability as we're still building, you know, the framework and the, you know, connections to be able to share?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's important to have a strategic framework in how you think about it. And by that, and I think that's really important because there's a lot of signal. I mean, there's a lot of noise and you've got to become discerning to pick up the signal because you're making very important business decisions and there's a lot of noise. So a strategic framework allows you to consider where do I want to, well, first is, I think you can center your strategy on the idea that the regulatory tailwinds are favoring this onward pace towards an app-based, consumer-centered, connected health ecosystem. If you, you know, pressure test that with me, I'm happy to talk to you. But once you reach some kind of agreement on that, you decide, how do I want to play in building that out? And there is a way in which, as a predicate, you want to be able to have a platform where you can unify data in FHIR, where you can then develop solutions and offer services and leverage all those capabilities to drive at value. And now it's your job to figure out where data interoperability comes together with system interoperability, because you can, if you're stringing together an app-based ecosystem, you're thinking about the fact that people do experience care in a fragmented way and they want choice and you want the open table experience, if you, ideally. And so if you can not only get a longitudinal health record that can be streamed and updated and then navigate people to experiences that are of value to them, there's no reason, you know, you can't string together an integration the same way I have my Google workspace integrated with my Slack, right? But in healthcare. And so if you start thinking about, I want to string those kind of app experiences together through FHIR integrations, then you start looking at the use cases that matter most to you. And some of those could be around improving clinical outcomes to perform better in risk-based contracts. It could be to address administrative efficiencies. It could be to build consumer loyalty. I mean, they're just, you start thinking about different pillars of value and then how you can build use cases. And I guess the final thing I would say is, it may seem overwhelming, but just get started. I mean, people are saying the same thing with AI and ChatGPT. You need to just get started so that you know what you're working with.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I've seen this over and over that you know, you have to be careful and thoughtful in healthcare, but the experience you have testing it is going to help you shape that strategic framework that you talk about. I was also reminded of something I heard someone say when you were talking about having that strategic framework. You know, interoperability doesn't solve anything on its own. You know, you could share data everywhere and it's going to solve nothing if the people don't use it, if it's not presented in a way that's useful to the doctor, if it's not made actionable to create a alert to a patient or whatever it might be, right? You know, you have to do that next step with the data to make it useful. And I think that's what's interesting is, you know, and so I love your example of saying, what are the use cases where you could actually use data to improve care, to improve the patient experience, to improve whatever it is you're working on? That's interesting to think about.
Well, and I think, you know, when we look at TEFCA, for example, and at APIs, there's an interesting kind of confluence that starts to occur. We're going to be seeing these prior auth APIs coming up and payer to provider APIs, payer to payer APIs. We know that HITECH provided recommendations on pharmacy interoperability, which also had a little piece for laboratory interoperability. So we're seeing that there are going to be all these other use cases that are going to be coming online. And so if you don't want to be on your back foot, you want to start building where interoperability is supported today so that you can actually participate in those innovations as they come forward. I think things like prior authorization is probably being prioritized because it's a pain point for payers and it's a pain point for, it's a pain point for everybody.
Yeah.
And it's a really marvelous opportunity to try to, it's a use case in order to demonstrate value and get everybody motivated to work the kinks out.
Yeah. Absolutely. Well, Jill, this was a lot of fun. I appreciate learning from you and having a little, health IT geek out session on policy. our audience always enjoys that. So thanks so much for taking time to share with us. And thanks everyone for watching and listening. If you want to find more great health IT content like this, be sure to check it out at healthcareittoday.com or search for Healthcare IT Today on your favorite podcasting applications. Thanks, Jill.
Thank you. Bye-bye.